Hello everyone, this is the Nursing Burst, and today we are changing things around. This episode will be done as a podcast. We used to do before as a presentation sort of style, and we will be exploring the topic of team performance. I'm honored to have two of the most amazing and interesting people I could really have a chat with today. Dr. Victoria Brazel, one of our senior staff specialists and director of Bond University Translational Simulation Collaborative. Very long.
Good job with that. Well done.
I did it a few times. And Dr. Eve Purdy, also one of our specialists and an applied anthropologist. Welcome and thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Jono.
I know Thursday is a busy day, so how's your Thursday been?
Thursday's the best day. I love Thursdays.
Yeah.
We get to spend time thinking about teams and getting better in the department, It's awesome.
Yeah. We just did two simulations with our team, including one where the team leader was blindfolded running a cardiac arrest. And so lots of great discussion about teamwork, communication, how we share mental models. It's very interesting.
That's great. I'm not going to go why they were blindfolded, but because that's probably going to take, the whole talk. But I have a personal question for both of you before we start, if you don't mind. And it's something that I'll probably ask every doctor when I have a chat to them. Out of all the medical disciplines, why did you choose emergency? And most importantly, why did you stay?
I haven't yet. So emergency medicine for me is the thing that felt most like a team sport for me. So I grew up playing team sports in high school. I was on 10 varsity teams in my grade 12 year. I basically didn't go to school. I just played sports. And you get this feeling when you walk onto a court that makes you feel like you belong and you're a part of something and you've got a shared goal and you're working with other people towards that same vision. And when you show up in a shift and work in the emergency department, it's that same feeling. So it just felt like the right place to be. And I stay here for that feeling when you show up on the shift with those 10 people that you're working with on any given day. That's what keeps me in it.
I liked so many things about emergency medicine when I did it as a junior doctor. And one of them was the fact that you got to do problem solving around undifferentiated patients, and you got to do it with a group of people who were helping you in that problem solving. So it was like a little mystery tour each day that you were going to work. And I think the fact that it's changed, because I've been doing this a lot longer than Eve, changed so much over time, and you watch teams change, you watch systems change, and you watch care change, and that has provided some longevity. And I guess I'm also pretty interested at the sharp end, the really sick patients, and I think that is the most wonderful feeling of never quite being mastered and you trying to get better at it. I'm now in the twilight of my clinical career, but for me the thing that keeps me involved with the coaching and training of teams is, it's quite humbling really to see what people can get done. So for me, that ongoing interest in how teams work, the ED continues to be a laboratory that's unparalleled.
It's awesome. And I'm glad that was your answer, because I was always hoping to. Because I think that's one of the most common answers. I think the teamwork that you get in ED, you just don't get it anywhere else. And I think, you come into ED for the action. You come to ED for that, not knowing what's going to come through and trying to work out what's wrong with the patients. But at the same time, you come through to work with a fantastic group of people that don't really, there are not a lot of people out there can do what we do, I think. When you sometimes I think about what we do on a daily basis, I'm like, Jesus,
And let's face it, it's funny.
Yeah.
Like you can't write the stuff that comes in our front door, can you? You can buy that
definitely
kind of entertainment.
Yeah, and I think we all have funny stories that we tell all of non-medical PEs and,
Funny, and it matters. Yeah. We do get this chance to look after people in an important moment in their life. And then we also get to do that with good people. So it's pretty awesome.
Awesome place to work, isn't it? Yeah. So I'm going to ask you probably a bit of a difficult request because I know you guys are fairly busy, but can you sort of summarize what you're currently working on, what you're currently doing? Yeah.
So I'm happy to start. Yeah. So my time is spent, as you said, at Bond University, but the time I spend here at Gold Coast Uni Hospital and at Robina is as the medical director of the simulation service. So I do a lot of work with teams around the hospital, in ICU, in theatre, and a lot of non-acute areas even. But as part of that, we're also, as we were just talking about earlier, involved in a program called the High Performance Teamwork Strategy. So with that, there's a small group of us that work with teams. And at the moment, we're still working with some maternity teams at the end of a long sort of 2.5 years of working with them. And we've spent the last 6 months working with cath lab teams, looking at different aspects of their performance and thinking about how teamwork, including the relationships in teams, the culture that underpins teamwork, and the processes that teams have. And so we use simulation and a variety of other things to really hold up a mirror to teams and their performance. And my skill set has evolved from being the person who delivers the care to the person who hopefully has the ability to help people reflect on their practice as individuals a bit, but particularly as a team. And then wearing our Bond hats, doing a lot of really interesting work with teams as well, some of them in acute care, but others building new hospitals in other countries and helping awesome. Them use sim and build their teams to do that.
Oh, wow, that's great. Yeah, it sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have the great opportunity to be a part of a lot of that. With my background as an applied anthropologist, I am absolutely fascinated and spend a lot of time thinking about how culture shapes how teams perform, and how we can very deliberately shape that culture to impact performance. So I do some of that work in the teams that Victoria just spoke about. I also like to think that every shift in the emergency department is a bit of an experiment for me, and is a opportunity to put into practice some of the kind of big ideas that we're thinking about, but on a daily basis with the team that I show up with. So sometimes that experiment works, sometimes it doesn't, but we give it a go.
Such a dynamic place full of so many different people. Yeah, it is sometimes like a big experiment just coming into work every day, right?
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. So I think we'll get into the nitty-gritty of why we're here today, which is chat about team performance and team dynamics. And I was reading this, I've been reading this systematic scope and review over the last week or so. And it's, although it deals with high performance sports teams, it related so much to the work that we do here. And more importantly for me, it related so much to the way that we do things here and the way that you guys have been trying to sort of change the culture in here as well, that I thought, you know, it will be relevant to sort of grab some of the some of bits out of the study. The article, summarizing the article, basically it identified four key variables as important for teamwork: team function, performance, and effectiveness. Number one, I don't think they're in any particular order, but number one was leadership style, which we're having a chat to about earlier. You work up in cardiac cath lab, and I think I like to start with the leadership roles and style. The second one was supportive team behaviors. Third one was communication. And the fourth one was performance feedback. So I think let's start with leadership roles and styles. I'll read you a little quote from the study, which I found really, really interesting. And so basically says, a study of leadership styles of football coaches indicated that leadership behaviors that communicated a clear and positive vision of the future appeared to reduce the risk of severe injuries by 29% to 40%. I mean, that can easily be translated to our work different settings, not just research, but in different settings. I would love you guys to just try and break down how leadership works within a team and how does it make it a high-performance team?
I'm happy to start. And I think the first thing is you use the word leadership, and I think it is important to distinguish that from leader because there are various leadership strategies that teams need to undertake. Some of them are undertaken by a single team leader. I also work with teams where there's a shared leadership model. For instance, a obstetrician and a midwife, postpartum hemorrhage. But the other thing is that it's what leaders do, it's not who they are. And I think you used the word style, whereas I would say that it's easy to underestimate the impact of what leaders do. Because yes, they can set a strategy, and that direction is so important, and making sure that people have what they need to get there and are given the autonomy to do it. But they also do need to take some responsibility for how they support the execution of that strategy. And thinking about removing the barriers for everybody else in the team to do their best work. And then finally, and this is probably the bit that Eve has really helped our thinking on, is they set a tone by what they do. They set some expectations for the values that the team will have, even if it's just small things like we're all going to have an opportunity to contribute here. Sets a value that I do want to hear from other people, and that's not just something I learned as a little behavior on a course. That actually is something that I believe. So I think recognizing leadership is everywhere or nowhere, and it's not just the function of a single leader.
Yeah, and I guess if we can get a bit granular about that in our department, we have some research data from our own department about just how critical leadership behavior is. So about 2 years ago, we undertook a study that was looking at psychological safety in our department, which is not people feeling nice. It's actually people feeling like they can contribute, like they can take risks. It is a core team principle that has to be present for teams to function effectively. And a big chunk of what makes people feel when they show up to work like they are valued and like they contribute is the way that they interact and are treated by their leaders in real time. Simple things that we hear from medical students and nurses that are new to the department is, I had such a great day because the consultant introduced themselves. Like that is the low bar that we have set, embarrassingly low bar that we have set for making people feel welcome and valued in what is regarded to be a pretty nice place to work. So I think there are some actual, very tangible things that leaders can do to draw people in. And for sports, it might be that those people end up less injured. In our emergency department, it might be that they stick around and work here longer. It might be that our patients have better outcomes. These are really serious consequences for leadership behavior. And I think we all have a chance and opportunity to think about how we set the tone and how we can do that in a really positive way.
Yeah. I think I like how you put, you set the tone, right? Because that's something, as soon as you come into work, it depends how someone might talk to you. It really can affect you the whole day. And I've been in that situation where, you know, you come into work and someone might tell you something and it just really mucks up your whole day and the way that you approach things. So, yeah, it's really nice the way you put it. I think moving on to that second point, the second thing that this study tried to sort of explored, is supportive team behaviors. I've heard them before as backup behaviors, which for me it's really interesting because you know, we do, apart from all the sims that you guys do here, we do a lot of sims in our workshops, in ALS, in Prime, and you do see it sort of come up from time to time in the teams, and this is something that I honestly find super interesting. Can you sort of explain that to me?
So I'd say in the past 6 months or so, we've started to think a lot more about backup behaviors, why they happen, what are the conditions, and what are the things that our teams can do to ensure that we are being supportive when we need to be. So there are a couple of things that excellent teams do that allow backup and supportive behaviors to happen. And I guess one of the most interesting things is a value that is something that our team does, that we help each other out, that we ask for help when we need it. So actually, this being a kind of cultural value that we adapt and flex and help each other out, I think I maybe have taken for granted a little bit in the emergency department. When we go work with other teams around the place, that sometimes actually just doesn't quite exist. And then we need to recognize when it's needed, which means we have to be aware of how our team's going, how other people are doing, and be monitoring that. And then it actually requires that we have the capability to provide whatever backup behavior or support is needed. And I think that's one thing that's been that it is a challenge right now with as much staff turnover as we have and as many new faces and also being as stretched thin from a staffing perspective is that sometimes we actually just don't have the capability in terms of staffing to provide the level of backup behavior that we would want to. So I think it's something that we probably underdo and underthink about and underbuild into our system. So even though that cultural value in the emergency department is here, that that's something that we do, we sometimes struggle a little bit in making the conditions right so that it can happen.
Mm. And I think it's easy to see that tangibly, say, in a sim, and it's usually the drugs nurse that needs the backup from someone else. And then as a team deciding, well, is that better to come from the airway nurse because we're not needing to do any airway management, or does it need to come from some outside the room because, in fact, we need to draw from the rest of the pod? So that's a really tangible one. But I just wanted to relate this backup behavior to the leadership one because I think it's teams underestimate how they can influence the leadership they get. And so my example of this is in the sims that we run up in ICU, usually they start with the registrars and the nurses doing quite a good job. And at some point in the sim, the consultant, the actual duty consultant, arrives and they don't know what's happened and they get a handover. And usually I would have, some years ago, debriefed that and asked the consultant about what they did and why they did it. But I've stopped doing that. And now I've said to the rest of the team, okay, so then Dr. X arrived and I look at the rest of the team, not that consultant, and I say, did you get what you needed out of the consultant? And sort of put it on them to say, don't just say we've got a good consultant or a bad consultant today. Say, this is the consultant here. This is how I'm going to get the most out of him or her. And I think it's really nice to see teams say, you know what, I can actually shape the leadership that we get.
Mm-hmm. Which is just providing a backup behavior to the leadership or a supportive behavior to the, the leadership, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. It's very interesting, isn't it? I think we'll go into sort of at the end, one of the last points is sort of the backup behavior to the leader, like you say, and also the feedback part of it, which, you know, as I said, we're going to come into it, but I also find it very interesting. And I think, you know, a cornerstone of a successful team, and I think it's one of the, when you ask someone what makes a successful team, is the first thing that they'll tell you, and that's communication. But How can we take this sort of communication to the next level? You know, you say people communication and people are like, you know, closely communication and all this. I'm like, but what else? Like, you're talking about such a complex system.
Yeah.
Communication doesn't really mean anything in a complex system. You need to try and break it down a bit more.
Yeah, we do need to get more sophisticated, and it is a bugbear of both of ours, I think, if people just rabbit off, oh, do more communication. No, do the right amount of communication with the right content at the right time, with the right amount of balance of signal and noise. Don't just keep talking all the time. Say the right amount, right time, to the right people with the right content. So easy to say.
Yeah.
But I think we actually need to spend more time reflecting on when it goes well as when it doesn't go well. And we've got some particular moments that are really helpful for us here. If you think about handovers, thinking about what I would call a minimum data set that needs to go in a handover. Eve's lovely work on things like briefings and huddles. These are communication moments as well. And I do think that particularly for those who coach teams and teach teams and who work in teams, we actually probably need to read a little bit about the nuances of all sorts of teamwork, but particularly communication. So we've even got the words to talk about communication. But I do think one of the things that came up today in our sims is how much communication happens non-verbally. And how good we also need to train ourselves be to pick up on communication that's happening that won't necessarily be in words. So they're real opportunities for us as well.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that has been quite helpful for my thinking about communication, it makes it hard because there is no right or wrong answer, or no right or wrong amount of communication, but is really getting honest at thinking about in any given situation how certain or uncertain is the problem that we're dealing with and how stable or dynamic is the team that we're dealing with. So there's no doubt that if Jono, you and I are working in recess together and a patient comes in with a STEMI, you and I probably actually maybe not even need to say anything to each other. We'll be able to look after that patient and they'll get the care they need. If I'm working with a team that I've never worked with before on a problem that is really complicated and confusing, all of a sudden the level of explicit communication that we'll need is going to have to go up a fair bit, and is probably, again, something for us to be aware of in a department that's as large as ours, with as many new faces as there are. Probably our threshold and amount of explicit communication that we engage in doesn't necessarily mean more communication, just means explicit above the table communication. There probably needs to be more of it. There's less that we can assume.
And I think that dynamic nature of being up there and thinking, all right, we have a team today that might need a bit more communication. You know, today we might have a very senior team, or the presentation that we're getting might not need to be, you know, we might not need to be throwing words up there. I've been in recesses where there's just been too much going on. And it really does affect the way that you think. It really does affect the way that you provide care. And I think more than anything, it really affects ultimately the patient's journey to where they need to go, because there's a lot of filtering that you need to do to get to, all right, ultimately as an ED, we want to get the patient out of here to a better place. And how can we do this if we have so many filters in between? Let's get rid of the filters and just be pretty, you know, pretty straight away. And I think the dynamic nature that you explain is it's a pretty important one, is it, for leaders, but also for people that actually work within the team, right? And a big one for me, because I've been working with the education team over the last close to a year now, and something that I find, I think a lot of people that come into education and team building, things like this, find quite hard, and it's providing actual feedback. So the fourth point in this paper was, it's called performance feedback. And it sort of explores, I'll read you another quote. It says, feedback strongly influences emotional reactions, which in turn affect employees' attitudes and role behaviors. Therefore, leaders may be better off framing the feedback to subordinates in a positive rather than a negative manner. Don't really like how it's worded. The whole subordinate is not doing it for me. But what I'm trying to get at here is, like, positive rather than a negative manner. Giving feedback is such a difficult thing. And I think I just wanted to get from you guys, how do you keep feedback? How do you, you know, how do you sort of think of a team? How do you provide feedback within a team, but also trying to think, oh, they're all different in this team. We've got a bunch of different people here. What we give to one person might not work for another. How do you go through that issue?
And I think there's a few different sources of feedback, and one that Eve might like to talk about is the after-action review, because we can actually probably generate a lot of feedback or reflection on performance in our own team. But what I will say is probably coming from the place of giving feedback, particularly in simulations, but also in the clinical environment. And the first thing I'll do is empathize. It's really hard. And we have our education fellows come for 12 months, and literally they spend a lot of that time learning how to debrief in a sim. And I don't know. I'm not as attached to positive or negative. I think it's important to give high integrity, useful feedback. And I think shying away from talking about performance that wasn't what we expected is not necessarily the goal. It is to say, to name it and to try and puzzle it out. Try and think, well, how did that happen? Because I'm pretty sure Jono knows what he's doing. But today, with this team, in this problem, he didn't do X, Y, or Z. So let's puzzle this out. How did that happen? And that's much more interesting than just saying, hey, mate, do it differently next time. And I think there are a skill set that clearly need to be done for that, but they're not just recipes. I think it really is coming from a stance that says, I am going to hold up a mirror and listen to what people are saying about what they did, try and help them explore that, try and draw out from the behaviors we observe the way people are thinking underneath. And then particularly in teams, try and get some triangulation on that so that we can understand both individual performance and team performance. So all that to say, the kind of coaching on coaching that I guess I do in things like our simulation debriefing programs is to say, have a structure to those conversations. Have some conversational techniques, but perhaps more than anything, have a stance where you're actually really interested in how things happen, not a determination to set people right.
Yeah, I think all of that is excellent advice. I think the one differentiator too, perhaps between this team systematic or sport systematic review and the reality that we have in medicine right now, is that for whatever reason, performance has become a bit less discussable in medicine. And there's a lot of, I think, shame related to performance for people. And for some reason, discussing that performance brings out that, maybe it's from medical school or nursing school, some type of really kind of emotional, shameful response. And so I think we have a culture problem as it relates to feedback in medicine that is going to be very slow for us to change. But I think one of the most powerful things that we can do to shape that culture of talking about our performance is to do it regularly and to not just save it for when things go wrong. I think that one of the most powerful ways that we can get better as teams and individuals is to have these conversations as close to daily as we can about simple things like getting to the CT scanner safe and fast, about an intubation that seemingly went well. Why did it go well? Could have it gone even better? Getting really curious about our everyday performance and talking about it with each other in conversations that are not as charged as maybe when things don't go right for a patient or when people don't perform well. So I think we will then develop the language and the stance around curiosity if these are just conversations that we do frequently. So clinical event debriefing or after action reviews, really short, sharp conversations that take 3 to 5 minutes with the team that you worked with, thinking about what went well, what could have gone better, and if there's anything that we need to action. I think gets us in the habit of thinking about our performance in a constructive way.
I think you've even made a lanyard card for that, haven't you?
I think I have, yeah.
You made two.
And look, I think that's possibly one of the biggest contributions that we make with SIM. Yes, maybe we learn some stuff, but I think if SIM is just one of the ways where we learn the habit of talking with each other about performance, I'm happy.
Yeah. Make it more common, isn't it? Just make it a thing that's not so structured, and you don't have to just be in a seam or in a recess to talk about it. It can be, you know, we work in pods, and realistically, recesses are not the cream of ED. The cream of ED is chest pains, I guess.
I would love to have a conversation with you, John, as the TL, about how our shift went together. You know, what could have we done to make the flow through this a bit better? How could have we supported the junior nurses and the registrars a bit better? How could have we improved the patient experience? You know, there's any number of things on my last shift that we could have done better as a team. And I went home and thought about a lot of them, but I think there would be some real team and organizational learning that could happen if we had those conversations together.
Yeah, sounds great, yeah. Well, we're sort of getting to the end now, and I don't want to extend because, you know, if we keep going, we'll just keep going all day.
That's the risk.
Look, I want to thank you both for taking your time and coming into this room, which is getting very hot at the moment, and, you know, really talking about this. It's a very important topic because ultimately, as I sort of introduced that before, the one reason why I stay in ED is because the team, you know, because I get to come to work every day, look after people, but also work with some fantastic, fantastic, amazing people, you know. And I think that's what drives a lot of us to come to ED and stay in ED. And I think if we can make, you know, we can make a little bit more effort, like you said, just to make these conversations fairly common, it eventually, slowly, but eventually will change the culture of, you know, and improve things for everyone. Yeah. So thank you very much for coming and talking to me.
Thank you, Jono, and thank you for all the work you do.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Have a great one. All right, guys, we'll meet you probably next month. We'll figure out what we're going to talk about. So keep yourself connected. I'll send you an email and see you all in Teams. See you later.